And it's all just more melodrama. But when you keep the mantra going, you can look into somebody's eyes, and at first they think, you can see all their thoughts go by when you can stay in the mantra. You can see them saying, what's he doing? Is he coming on to me? So, yeah, and then it's just to stay there, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Until pretty soon they vibrate all their paranoia, except all they get back is absolutely clear message. They don't get back anything that reinforces the paranoia, because you're just here. You're just right here in this mantra. Until pretty soon they calm and calm and calm until they're here. And the minute they get here, there's a great feeling of release in them. Because the place we meet is in the mantra. The place we meet is behind all of the stuff. All of the stuff. And when you can stay in the place behind the stuff, you look at everybody coming towards you and you see all of the stuff of life. That becomes the way of developing great awareness of how it all is. That brings you into harmony with the world around you. Because the harmony comes as you can calm down and get free of your own ego melodrama, your own patent place, your own whatever your drama is. Now, you look at somebody really that is sexually very exciting to you. See, that's a good one. And you look at them, and there is a thing that pulls you into the little melodrama of turning on. You start to feel arousal happen in the whole business. See, and your eyes get a little, you know, like you start to do the thing. And then you go in, Om, Om, Mani Padme Hum, Om, Mani Padme Hum. And then you see that whole drama happening. And you see, because the way in which every time a person does something towards you, you're just sitting there doing Om Mani Padme Hum, and they look at you like, I really like you, see? And you get a certain flash inside from that. Your responding organism, you respond to whatever drama they're projecting. And you can either climb into that and say, well, that's because I'm really a nice guy, you know. Or you can go back and, oh, Monday, Padme. Or they look at you like, I don't trust you. See? Suddenly you become untrustworthy. You know that feeling inside? Well, if they don't trust me, there must be something. Whatever impure, you know, people who are very critical of others. And they go around always creating that thing in you, like there must be something in me that's wrong somewhere. And you can feel that in you, but the mantra allows you to look at the feeling in yourself and look at the thing in them and stay in a place behind each of those. Until finally, when you meet another person who is centered, it's just like you met somebody else who's doing Om Mani Padme Hum, you see. Because you meet them and they're right here too. And they see all the drama as drama. And the interesting thing is, it only takes the flash of a look to come to that place when you're centered enough, see? You watch a person, it's like a pinball machine going through apples and bananas and oranges, you know? You look at them and you see paranoia, love, seduction, anger, fear, distrust, and then here we are. And sometimes you can walk down the street and from the time you meet somebody's eyes coming this way, it may take just this long to go through that whole trip, because time is not the relevant variable. It'll happen just as fast as you are straight. Because each human being will run through the whole category of places we can get hung up together. And if you're at any one of those places, if they find you home in that place, that's it, baby. That's what the relationship is for that round. So the game is always running through, and that one too, sure, and that one too, and that one too, and that one too. See, and taking that, and that, and that. And the far out thing is when you're walking down the street and you see some, like, most unlikely person to be here coming down the street. You see somebody with a cane and a bad back and a heavy burden and, oh, look, and you look into their eyes and suddenly, boom, here we are. Just that little flash of here we are. And it's behind all the melodrama. Behind all the melodrama. That's a conscious contact with another person. Conscious contact. Otherwise, you're only living out mechanical dramas all the time. Some stimulus is arousing a set of responses in you, and you're running through your cycle. And then mantra just keeps you so that, for example, mantra with me at this moment, since the thing that is takes you a little further to think about, see, once we get into words, you get busy listening again. You're not doing your mantra, most of you now. You're busy listening to me, which means you're just caught in another melodrama. Like all the time I'm talking to you, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. You can use the eyes in the same way as you use mantra. I don't know that I can, I don't know that we can demonstrate this as a group. Perhaps we can, I don't know. It's very tricky. If you look into somebody's eyes, I'll do it with you just to show you how it works. And I look into your eyes and I'm talking to you now. Okay? And you're listening to me. And your hand is on your foot and your hair is over your glass and we're both aware of that. And we're aware that I'm talking and the words are coming out of this mouth and those ears are listening and here we are. The eyes become the mantra. The eyes are the same place and all the words are just stuff going around the eyes. Okay, can you hear that? Now, what you develop is a vehicle. The vehicle, in this case, is the eyes. It's totally impersonal. And often, what I do, which is used to be called psychotherapy, in a number of incarnations back, which is behavior change, I guess you'd call it, or something, is to look into somebody's eyes and say, anything you can think of that you can't say to me, say to me. Okay? That's the fiercest statement, requirement you can make of another person. Because all the thoughts that they would hide from you, which would keep you an object to them, which could keep you him, you say, okay, let's cut. You want to get on with it. What do you say? Should we get enlightened? Let's get going. Or would you like to play like you'd like to get enlightened? No, I really want to get on with it. You really want to get on? Yes, I want you to be my teacher. All right, for me to be your teacher, I've got to be inside you. You're going to let me in? Oh, I'd like to let you in. But I don't know how. All right, the simple rule of the game is I'm going to look into your eyes. Anything you can think you can't say to me, say to me. Now, the person looks at you and they say, well, I can't think of anything. I say, well, there's no rush. I'm just doing Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, and Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And then, you see, you don't have to say it aloud. Just think now. If I were looking directly in your eyes and I gave you the instruction, anything you can think which you cannot say to me, which embarrasses you, shames you, frightens you, disconcerts you, would feel like it would cause some discomfort in you, that if you said it to me, say it to me, all right? Now, just think of what that would be. So somebody says to me, you look like an old, lecherous, vile, and I'm looking in their eyes and saying, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Inside, I feel like the old, lecherous, vile, and I'm seeing that feeling in me and saying, yes, and that one too. Right? And then they keep looking, and pretty soon they say, you look like Buddha. There's light coming out from you everywhere, and you're so beautiful. And I feel so beautiful, and light coming out of me everywhere. And I think, and that one too. See, sometimes you like to hold on to them, but yeah, and that one, it's still be big Buddha, you know. They say, I want to pick up that caviar and crackers, lemon and, you know. But now it is literally true. There is nothing anybody can say to me that makes any difference. People say, isn't that too bad? Well, is it or isn't it? What do you lose and what do you gain? What's the bird in the hand and what's the bird in the bush? What is that all about? Because to the extent that you can center that way, you allow another person to get free of their own melodrama, which includes all the stuff that they hold on to, which keeps them away from other human beings, keeps them being an island unto themselves. And the faster in which you and I can move into a space where here we are, there's nothing that has to be done. Nobody has to do anything. It's just a state of isness, state of isness. And it's behind all the dramas. And it can go on and on and on and on and on. I've sat with some people looking directly into their eyes for 10 hours. And they go through and they think, oh, well, there's nothing else. And I can look and I can see. When I look into their eyes, I can see light. It's like a light coming out of their face. And then I see a kind of opaqueness. And the opaqueness is their thought forms. That's what the opaqueness is. It's that they're still thinking. They're still back in their thinking. And all thoughts finally fall away. And then we experience light. We just, the two of us, come into the light together. The minute you can stop your thoughts and I mine, we are in the light. But the problem is you can't stop your thoughts. You can only let them fall away. And the way you let them fall away in this case is using the other person's eyes as the central focus place. And then seeing all the thoughts as clouds that are going by, as just stuff. And most of them just come like the walls are brown. Well, there's no reason why you can't tell me the walls are brown. So that isn't one you have to say. It's a thought that comes, you notice it, and it goes away. And here we are, and the walls are brown. And the floor has a carpet on it. And the floor has a carpet on it. But then a thought will come into my head that I can't tell you. And then immediately there's a thickening of the opaqueness, because I've already got a thought. And in Freud's terms, I'm cathecting libido. I'm attaching energy to that place and turning it off. And it's all that set of those things that keeps that opaqueness going between us. Until pretty soon, any thought can come in, go through, go out. Come in, go through, go out. You're done with it the minute you note it. It doesn't hold on because there's no reason to hold any of them. They all just go through just as fast as you can bring them in, note them, bye. And then the thoughts start to calm down. And then the two of you come into a place where you go behind thought. And that's the whole game. It's the game of Tai Chi, it's the game of meditation, it's the game of mantra. It's the game of calming down, breaking your identification with your own thought forms. Okay? With your own thought forms, whatever they may be. I have to think about, well, what'll I do next? The answer to what'll I do next is Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme. If in doubt, do mantra. That's the simple name of the game. For the rest of your life, if in doubt, do mantra. Or do mantra and everything else will take care of itself. That's the faith. That's the statement based on the faith. But I could say to you, all right, if you would like to be an enlightened being, all you have to do for the rest of your life is do mantra. Don't ever have to do another thing. Well, what happens if I need to go to the toilet? Don't worry. You'll get to the toilet. Just keep doing the mantra. Just stop the mantra to go to the toilet. Ramakrishna tells the story of a little boy who says, Mummy, will you wake me if I need to go to the bathroom? The mother says, don't worry about it. You know, when you need to go to the bathroom, it'll take care of itself. When you try to meditate, which is for example, I hope many of you experienced what it was like when we were eating and when that very far out beautiful piano playing started. Like the piano playing is groovy and we're all digging it and at the same place we're consciously eating. See? Now at first I go through, oh, piano's playing. See? How can I concentrate on being conscious if the piano's playing? On eating. See? Then I realize that in order to do my task, I'm turning off part of the universe. Then I say, and that too. Then I am listening to the piano and consciously eating at the same moment. Doing the mantra simultaneously. People get under some they get attached to a linear thought form, and that's got to be broken, because really, ultimately, you just think in gestalts. You just are aware of all the things happening around you at any moment. You don't think about them in linear terms. Now, it is useful when you're beginning to do these things to cut down the amount of external stimulation. That's why most or many of you have moved away from cities and are living in much quieter environments. My optimum place I live in is where there's no electricity, where there are no people coming and going, where there's no traffic, where there's no nothing. In fact, the best place you can work, if you're really going to start the game fiercely, is to find a cave underground where it's just rock and just go and sit down in the cave. Because then you cut out all the stimulation, because there's nothing groovier than birds in the trees, but you've heard birds in the trees 10,000 times before, and every time you hear a bird, you've got to go label, oh, there's a bird, and that's another thought form. And what you find is the entire environment keeps sucking you into thought forms all the time. Once you have calmed your mind down to one-pointedness, then you can enjoy nature, you can groove, you can do anything you want, you can hang out in cities and do all that, but until then, you have to create at certain points an environment where you can cut down the amount of external stimulation. It might be earplugs, it might be whatever it is. It might be going to a closet in your own house. I've been saying to people, if you want to have a really high vacation this year, okay, really cheap and high, really cheap and really high, just clear out a closet, see, and go in and sit down and arrange so that food is left once a day by the closet door and there's a toilet nearby and everybody knows what you're doing so nobody will bug you, and just go in and sit down for 2 weeks and I'll tell you, somebody new will come out. It'll take you through trips you never believe. Because most of us are just copping out into external stimulation all the time. You see it yourself. I was watching people light cigarettes before at lunch. I was watching that whole stimulus sequence of attention. You watch people walking out to look at nature. Looking around, what's that noise? What was that? What's that? I gotta know what was that. It's important. What's happening in the world today? What do you say? Should we go down to the... Did you turn on... Have you seen that? Taste that, feel that, smell that, think about that. Let's think about this. Maybe we ought to think about... These are all stuff. They're all lots of stuff. And the idea is that all that stuff is there and it's all available. When you become the master, when you're the servant of it all, it's all too much. It's all just taking you on a trip in the illusion, deeper and deeper and deeper all the time. So the first thing is you've got to calm down until all thoughts just go by. All thoughts go by. Now to do this, you develop a method of meditation. And there are many methods of meditation, and each person must find his own vehicle. Some people can sit and meditate. Others, from where we're starting, can't do that. And they would be able to do mantra all day long. Others can't do that, and they will be able to sing holy songs because they can open their heart. Others can do whatever method works. They all go to the same place. All yogis go to union. That's the game. Yes, well, Gyan Yoga, the yoga of the intellect, beating the intellect, leads to exactly the same place. The only difficulty is that it is infinitely or finitely, but almost infinitely seductive to stay in the dualism of knowing you know. You see? That is, the role of the experiencer or the knower is the one that must be transcended. And the thing about the intellect is that the thinking mind takes an object. It thinks about something. And therefore, it keeps preserving that relationship between the thinker and that which is thought about. Okay? And you can keep thinking about things until you see more and more how it all is, and more and more how it all is, and more and more how it all is. But ultimately, there must be the surrender or the transcendence of the thinker and that which is thought about. Okay? Is that in relation to what you've just said? So that many of the people who have tried to use the method of Gyan Yoga, of the mind beating the mind, often get caught in knowing they know because they get so close. Like the prime example in my own lifetime, in my personal context, was Aldous Huxley. I mean, Aldous was a very conscious being. And at the same moment, he couldn't give up knowing he knew. He was just seeing how it all was so exquisitely. It's called, it's the Godhead. It's the highest place on the causal plane. It's the highest of the highest planes. It's the Godhead. It's the place before you go into the formless. It's the place where you're seeing all form. You're seeing the universal laws. You're seeing how it all is at every level. But then you have to give up being he who sees. It's like the first time you experience bliss, astral bliss. Wow, the bliss is so great, you just want to bathe in it. And the instructions say, enjoy the bliss and then go beyond the experiencing of the bliss by becoming the bliss. Same way you go beyond the experiencing of knowing to become that which is known. Now, knowing can take you a long way, however. Very long way. But the end point is always the mindless state, is the no mind, is the place of no mind, where thinking becomes the servant, not the master. Just like your hand doesn't go up by itself, you lift your hand. Well, the same way, your thinking mind is available when you need it. But all the rest of the time, it's just absolutely nothing. Nothing. And then you begin to see that your thinking mind is needed less and less and less and less and less. And that's very, very far out. When you begin to understand that wisdom and knowledge are two entirely different matters. And that knowledge is very finite and very... The collection of objective knowledge is like a drop in the bucket compared to what it is to be wise. Because being wise is when you get out of the time-space locus that says, I am me who knows, then you merge with that which is around you and you become wisdom. And when you become wisdom, you don't know you know. You gave that one up. But you are wise. And then whatever response comes out of you is the optimum response. It's the optimum response that comes out of total conscious merging with it all. At the same time, you are like, you're like a dull normal. Nothing's happening inside you at all. When you meet a no-mind person, you just are awed by their simplicity. Their simplicity. And they can be talking about the most complex, exquisite machinations of life in the most intellectual terms, and you still see that it's only dance stuff they're doing. That behind it all, they are totally childlike in the sense of nothing. They're just naive. They're unworldly. It's all, yeah. It's the way. They didn't collect it. They don't identify with it. So, the technique of Gyan Yoga is beautifully exemplified in what's called the koan, which is the technique, you know, of foiling the rational mind by giving it an impossibility or a paradox. And when you can understand it and say yes and embrace the whole thing, then you've transcended the rational, linear process of thought. But the other techniques of meditation are just to take one place and focus on it and bring your mind down and down and down and down and down and down until you can stay in one place and all other thoughts go by. Be it somebody's eyeballs, be it your breathing going in and out, be it the mantra, be it a face, be it whatever it is. Until there's only that, and then you wipe that one out. That's the secret, that's the trip, that's the steps in what's called Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi in Patanjali system. You go in, you sit down. See, I'll go into my room and I'll sit down and I'll get comfortable. And then I pick whatever method of meditation I'm going to use at that moment. Whichever one happens to appear is the one I use. So if it's, for example, a focus somewhere in one of my centers, I work with that. I may be focusing on the light in my ajna and just bring the light in more and more and more right here. I might be focusing on my breath, on my muscles going up and down with my breath. Take this one that I always teach, the Satipatthana Vipassana. Rising, falling, rising, falling. All these muscles just go flip, flip with every breath. Flip, flip. So you just get so rising, falling. Rising, falling. Just take 15 minutes every morning and every evening and sit down and just watch those muscles go up and down. And that's your instructions. Do nothing else all the time for those 15 minutes, but do that. Any other thought that comes into your head, let it go by. All you got to do is watch rising, falling. Rising, falling. Rising. Keep doing it until pretty soon there's just those little muscles inside here that are doing that flip. And in your head is this rotating set of words, rising, falling, rising, falling. Baby makes a noise, the baby gurgles. We all note the baby gurgling. You can note it if you want baby gurgle. Then rising, falling. Rising, falling. Window rattles, window rattles. Rising, falling. Rising, falling. Knee hurts, knee hurts. Rising, falling. Rising, falling. You just keep coming back to that place. You're just slowly foiling the mind's ability to take you on trips all the time, that's all. And the calmer and the more centered you get, like in Tai Chi, with the movement, the body movement, your consciousness is right where that movement is. It's nowhere else. You're not thinking about other things. You're not thinking, here I am doing Tai Chi. Just the movement, that's all there is. Just that consciousness goes right with it. That's the whole business. Total one-pointedness. In karate, the way a board is broken is that your full consciousness is right on the back end of your hand when you do that. All the energy is right there because you're not thinking about anything else. You're not thinking of, now I'll break the board. One-pointedness of mind is an extraordinary, extraordinary vehicle for... It's the prerequisite, it seems to me, of the entire game. In terms of two strategies for getting on with the work, I'll give you the maximum and the minimum strategy that I can conceive of and work with. The maximum strategy was when I lived in the temple. Up at 4:30, bathing in the river, back, bathing with mantra. Up into, you don't get up immediately. You start at around 2 in the morning. You're sleeping on a hard surface. You don't sleep too deeply. Right? You didn't eat. You only eat at noon. You don't eat in the evening so that you're very light, so that you don't sleep that deeply. And around 2 in the morning, you start a dream, you start the mantra going, right? When you come out of deep sleep. And so you're Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. And the dreams are going by. They're just astral work you're doing, just like this is physical work we're doing. It's just stuff you're doing to live out your karma. And all you do is do it consciously. Note your astral life going by you. Dream consciously. It's the same place you get into when the alarm went off and you don't want to give up the dream yet, and you remember to get up, but you also try to keep the dream till you finish with it. Everybody goes through that, where there's a two-level operation. When you do this for about 2 or 3 hours. And then 5:30, 6, 4:30, whenever it is, you get up and you wash and you do your toileting and all that, and then you come and you sit down in front of your puja table. You sit down in front of a place you have designated as a place where there is no other game but the game of becoming conscious. It's a crutch. These are all crutches I'm talking about, and they will all go ultimately. When you're in no mind, you can just live just like everybody else all the time without any, but these are all crutches. You sit down in a place, you may have some pictures around of beings who've made it that help. Like Buddha or Christ or whoever it is that you want to hang out with, Ramakrishna, Ramana Maharshi. Some current ones, Satya Sai Baba, Kirpal Singh, Meha Baba. I don't know, and you might just have their pictures around or not. If pictures turn you off, don't have the pictures. But they're just groovy cats to hang around because they know how it is. And they give you straight messages all the time. They're looking like looking into somebody's eyes who's finished. Just a pure mirror. And then you learn how to honor, to consecrate. You light some incense, and you might make the symbol of Om 3 times. Just the symbol of Om with the incense before these pictures. Now what you're doing is you're honoring that place in all of us which is. You're honoring the place in yourself, the highest place in yourself. When you honor Ramana Maharshi, you're not honoring Sam Maharshi or Ramana Maharshi in the form of Ramana Maharshi. You're honoring the fact that he's a living statement of who we are. So that you honor, which is the offering, it's doing from where you are in the illusion to that which is beyond the illusion. You're honoring gate, gate, paragate, parasama, again. And then you do your puja, and then you sit down, and then you start to center. And you may start out by doing your breathing. You might just meditate, just calm down, calm a little bit down, and then start to do your breathing. And on and on. And then after that, maybe you'll do some asanas, some hatha yoga. Now, if you're going to do asanas, which you'll finally figure out, you've got to get your body straight, because you'll see that you're spending most of your time doing this and this and this and this and this and all this business, that you finally get pulled into getting your body straight with hatha yoga. And the thing about hatha yoga is it not only gets you so you can sit and cool your body out, but it opens, it's when it's done right, it sensitizes you to a whole lot of nerves in your body that you can hear. You start to hear them and work with them. They're like radio receivers. And the third thing that asanas are is that they are mudras. They are statements again. That every mantra, like you go into a twist, and you get into it, and you sit up straight, and you turn your body, and you get into it as well as you can, and then you make the statement, you center perfectly. And you are in this position as if you were born this way. You are a piece of sculpture. You've never been any other way but this. And the minute you've centered in that place, then you're finished with that particular statement. And as you get more conscious, you will begin to feel how each asana, meaning seat in hatha yoga, each of the 84 asanas is a different kind of a statement. You'll start to experience the statementness, the nature of that statement, when you make it each time. Okay? It's like calligraphy. And you do your asana slowly and consciously. You take each asana, you go into it gently, you make the statement, you come out of it, you go into the next one. A good hatha yogi can go through all 84 of them, just in, flip, out, in, flip, out, in, flip, out, and all the time is staying perfectly centered through it all. You finish your asanas, and then you meditate. Do rising and falling, or focus on something, and do that for 15 minutes, 30 minutes. Now, I'm giving you the maximum program, if you're going on a maximum program. Then you might go do Tai Chi. Then you might take tea or take something in the morning. Very light. Very, very light. Tea would be enough. One meal a day is plenty. And then you would sit down and you might read like one of the writings of somebody who's made it. You might read the writings of Ramakrishna or Buddha or something like that. Don't read secondary sources. Read the straight stuff. Read the New Testament. Read the words of Jesus. Don't read the rest. Get the Bible where it's in red, where Jesus speaks, and read his words. Don't read all the rest of the drama. Read the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Gita, Philokalia, the Kabbalah, the, you know, on and on. There's lots of stuff you can read in that category. Don't read a lot, though. Everybody's collected enough. We've all been collecting, like, have you read this? Have you read? Did you read the Upanishads? The Upanishads are not something you read like that. See? The Upanishads are written in little lines, which seem like a hang-up if you're going to get through pages. Man, you got to go little line, little line, little line. But it's meant... Study in the Hindu system, in the yoga, is done by studying a shloka. You can take one of those little lines and just work with it. Just open any one, like I've got maybe six or eight holy books around me sitting at my puja table, and I can close my eyes, pick any one like the I Ching or the Tao or whatever it happens to be, pick it up, open it, look at the first line that hits my eye, read the line, close the book, put it away, and that's my study for the day. And then I study it. I go in that line and around it and over it and through it, and I associate it to everything in my life, and I just do it until I've done that line, till I have become one with that line. That's study. Study is not collecting information. Study in this sense is vibrating with information till you become one with it. Now, at around 10 or 11, if you've got karma yoga to do, you do some karma yoga. You might have to clean up your room or brush something or do something, or and then at 11 you may prepare your food. All done with mantra, all done perfectly consciously, very aware. Now, if you're doing the full treatment, before you take the meal, you do your pranayama again, your breath thing again. Then you take your food. You take your food silently by yourself. In fact, you stay silent all the time, except when you're singing holy songs or saying mantra. Take your food by yourself. Eat it consciously. You learn how to consecrate your food, bless it, honor it. Part of the Divine Mother, feeding the Divine Mother to the Divine Mother. After your meal, you rest for a little while. And maybe there'll be a walk in nature or something like that. But do it consciously. It's not to go out and groove with nature. It's to be conscious of how it all is. So you keep the mantra going. Take a walk with mantra. And just look at it all and watch it all. Move very slowly. Or just sit down and meditate for another few hours. If you can do it. I mean, I just ran a seminar in New Mexico all fall up in Lama, New Mexico. We have a place 7,000 feet up. And we took seven little houses, and they were A-frames or domes, and we insulated them and heated them, and then there were 19 of us, and then everybody would go into one of these houses for anywhere up to 19 days. Usually they'd go in for 5 days first, and then like 14 days or 10 days or something like that. The house had in it a little wood stove, supply of wood, a bottle of water, period, was completely cleaned out. You would walk in there, and I was a teacher, so I would determine what people would take in. So the first time I'd say, what would you like to take into the cabin? So they'd say, well, I'd like to take my sleeping bag. I'd say, groovy. They'd say, I'd like to take these books, and they'd make a list of books. Then I want to take my notebook so I can keep notes of what happens to me. I'd say, that's wonderful. I'm going to take some candles. I'm going to take these holy pictures. Oh, that's all groovy. I think I'll take a little knitting or something, or I'll take, I want to do some sketching. That's wonderful. And, you know, and I just let them do the whole thing for 5 days their way. And a lot would happen, a great deal would happen. And every day the food is brought at noon, a guy comes singing holy songs so that you know somebody's coming, so there's no social interaction. If you have any messages, leave, you leave a little note outside the door saying, send Ramdas. I was the only one that could come to visit them. Send Ramdas or water, and that bottle would be out there, and they'd get water, or more firewood or something like that, and whatever you need, they were taken care of. And you were there for your 5 days or 10 days. And if you could do it, you just sat, because the next time, when it came for their second round, they'd say, okay, I'm going in for the second time. I would say, all right, this time I'm going to control what you take in. Say, all right, what can I take in? I said, your sleeping bag. And they'd wait. They'd have their big bags full of stuff they were ready to take in. I'd say, you can store all that in my cabin. Yeah, but, well, do you want to do the thing, or what's your game? I don't know. And then off they'd walk into a room for 10 days with their sleeping bag. Well, you can only be fascinated with making tea and with keeping yourself warm, see, and walking around the room so many times. And you can only sleep so long. First, everybody goes into a long sleep thing. See, they sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep. Then you get tired of sleeping. Then what are you going to do? Right? You get up and it's getting dark and you're not sleepy. Right? I mean, if you want to go on a horror trip, horror trip. You climb the walls. What did I get myself into this thing for? I've got to get out of here. I got to remember. I just thought this important thing. I can't write it down. What'll I do to remember it? See? No way to remember it. Either you got it or you don't got it. And by the end of the 10 days, whoever comes out of that is really interesting, I'll tell you. Now, some people freak and they can't make it. They're not ready to handle that. And they just come, ah, you know, they're suddenly you find them in the kitchen, you know, like, eating away. And then people had the option of, some of the people fasted for the full, some people went in for 14 days with only their sleeping bag and didn't take any food. Right? Just had water delivered and wood.